Well, events like the arrest of Turkish publisher Ragib Zarakulu happen. Writers often want to pen their thoughts. But the digitisation of information means that fast responses are usually reactive rather than analytical. It's often difficult for authors to respond quickly to world events in a comprehensive way, especially if they pursue the traditional publishing route. Now writers are looking at alternative ways to get their analysis out there. I'm sure you remember Norway's Utøya massacre in July, when almost 80 people were murdered by right-wing Norwegian nationalist Anders Breivik. While the media speculated on Breivik's motives, seven prominent Australian writers formed their own opinions and writing essays on the attack. But to avoid the long publishing queue, they took the e-publishing route instead. Their e-book collection of essays is called On Utøya, and to tell us about the move away from standard publishing are two of the contributors. In our Sydney studio is author and journalist Anthony Lowenstein. Welcome, Anthony.
Thanks for having me.
And with me in Melbourne is author and editor of the Overland Literary Journal, Jeff Sparrow.
Hey.
Welcome to the book show, both of you. Now, I'll start with you, Jeff. What was it about the Utøya massacre that compelled you to write about it?
Well, this seemed a tremendously important event to me, a real wake-up call that for a long time the paramount form of racism that we were seeing, not just in Europe but also in America and Australia, was increasingly directed against Muslims. And people have been talking about this for some time, that this new anti-Muslim bigotry was taking on forms very similar to the anti-Jewish bigotry in the 1920s. And suddenly we had an event where we saw that this talk could very easily be turned into action with a horrific massacre that in some ways came out of nowhere, but in other ways had been building for a long, long time. So it seemed very important to respond to this, because if it happens once, it can happen again.
And Anthony Lowenstein, what about you? What moved you about this?
I think for me, in the Breivik's manifesto after his massacre, a 1,500-page manifesto appeared, and what became very clear in that, as Jeff rightly said, is that many of the ideas and thoughts expressed by him weren't on the fringes. His actions themselves obviously suggest a person who's able to kill, which clearly suggests a degree of psychosis. However, his ideas actually are quite mainstream. What I mean by that is that in Europe, particularly in America and Australia, since September 11, 2001, there's an increasing nexus between the right wing, both in the extreme sense and a mainstream sense, and, for example, in my essay, talking about Israel. So as one quick example, you see earlier on this year, members of Europe's far right being welcomed to Israel, to the Holocaust Center outside Jerusalem, and welcomed by prominent members of the Israeli Knesset, the parliament. So the idea, whereas years ago, anti-Semite neo-Nazis would obviously not be welcomed in Israel, goes without saying, we have a situation now where people like Breivik looked at what was happening to Europe in the last 10 years and saw a Muslims taking over, the so-called demographic threat, which is also an argument that's made in Israel, I might add, and secondly, a sense where Europe's far right and Israel are now allies, not because they love Jews, but because they see Muslims and Islam as the common threat.
They share a common enemy. My enemy's enemy is my friend, as you say.
Absolutely, yes.
And Jeff Sparrow, how many writers have contributed to this ebook, and who are they?
It's a collection of different writers, both from Australia and some from the UK. And the way that the book came about, and many of us had been writing about these topics. I mean, one of the things that was so distressing about the Utøya massacre was precisely that people had been warning that such a thing was likely, that the rhetoric against Muslims was becoming so toxic and so murderous that it was only a matter of time before somebody turned that rhetoric into action. And so because we had been writing about it, the drivers behind the book, Elizabeth Humphreys and Guy Rundle, were able to contact various people both in Australia and in the UK, and suggest that we collaborated to get something out there while the event was still in people's minds.
And you include, for example, Richard Seymour, a writer based in London. I think he analyses that manifesto that Anthony was discussing before, which, you know, kind of claims that Europe has lost its cultural confidence. And your contribution, Jeff Sparrow, was about the sort of Islamic ideologues, the historic context.
One of the things that I've been writing about for some time is the way that the old tropes of anti-Semitism that we used to read about in the 1920s have now been mainstreamed, except that the tropes are exactly the same, the rhetoric's exactly the same, but it's now directed, the hatred is now directed not against Jews, but against Muslims. So you can say all the old slurs against Jews. They keep to themselves, that they're clannish, they're linked to extremism, they dress in an odd way, they have this strange religion. And if you said that about Jews, you would be rightly condemned as a bigot. If you say it about Muslims, you can publish for major newspapers and throughout the world, and nobody thinks that there's anything wrong with this.
You use the burqa analogy too, the discussion around the burqa.
That's right.
Which is quite controversial, really.
If you look back to the 1920s, there's the same obsession with the way that Jews dress and the strange customs that they have and all the rest
of it. The food they eat.
That's right. And we rightly now recognise that as racism, and we see it as a harbinger of the violence to come. It doesn't seem such a jump to see what's happening now as a harbinger of events like Utoya, where you have this whole poisonous blogosphere of anti-Muslim writers who are saying that there's a war going on between Islam and the West, and we must take matters into our own hand. And as Anti says, I mean, Breivik was clearly disturbed in some sense, but in other senses he was merely putting into action the rhetoric that you can find all over the internet.
And you talk about the internet and the blogosphere. Is that why you took this e-publishing route, to bypassing the sort of the normal traditional paper route?
Well, part of it was that we wanted to respond quickly, that this is an event that generated a tremendous amount of discussion. And what happened was that the nature of that discussion shifted very quickly. In the first hours after the event, a whole series of commentators assumed that the perpetrator was Muslim. And so when that assumption was being made, it was seen as a political attack. But as soon as it was established that the perpetrator was blonde, blue...
It was pretty quick, though, wasn't it?
Yes, that's right. And as soon as it was established that the perpetrator was blonde, blue-eyed, then there was this concerted attempt to depoliticise the event, to say this guy was mad, there's no political implications, there's nothing to discuss here and all the rest of it. And so the idea of getting the book out in e-form was to counter that depoliticisation and to say that, well, actually, there's very rarely been crimes that have been more politicised than this. This guy wrote a 1,000-page manifesto spelling out exactly what he was going to do and why he was going to do it. And if we depoliticise that, we leave ourselves open to it happening again.
Anthony Lowenstein, there was a lot of online discussion after them via the blogs and the Twitter. But how much of an influence was that for you?
Well, a great deal. I mean, Jeff and I, for example, both publish books in print, and clearly we intend to keep on doing so. But the truth of the matter is, as both of us know, and anyone who writes books also realise, that the time frame is often frustratingly slow. Of course, you have to write the book itself, which takes time. But in an edited collection such as this one, it seemed to make sense to go as an e-book route. And I think also, as Jeff stated a minute ago, these sort of issues also, I think, were depoliticised because many of the people who had, in my view, were complicit in creating the atmosphere, didn't want to talk about it. And I'm not just talking about people on the fringes here. We're talking about individuals in Europe, in Australia, in America, who are in the mainstream. I think that there's a sense that if this would have happened many years ago, we would have said, crazy guy expressing crazy views. These views are now mainstream. I'm talking about individuals, including, as the book discusses, Andrew Bolt from Murdoch Press in Melbourne and many, many others in America and elsewhere. We're not saying in the book Andrew Bolt was to blame for Breivik. Obviously not. However, the rhetoric and the atmosphere that is created by that kind of arguments that he makes creates an atmosphere that says that Muslims are the other. And I think Breivik clearly in his book, and should I say in his manifesto, what we talk about in the book and why we thought an immediate response, which also I might add, if nothing else, to not have an access to links in a book is actually quite frustrating. I spend a lot of my time online. And
that's one of the benefits, isn't it? That you
absolutely.
Can, on an online, you can actually have the links hyperlinked.
Indeed. And, of course, one of the things that we didn't have time to do, but I think e-books certainly can do, and I think one of my future books will do this, is obviously embedding audio and video within the book. I mean, it makes perfect sense to do that, rather than simply having it as text. There's nothing wrong with that. I write books. I like writing. But the possibilities of what you can do in a more sort of interactive way, I think, is an option. And also we see in the States in the last 5 years particularly, e-books are taking off. I don't think that print books or dead tree books are going to die tomorrow. But the trajectory, like with newspapers, I think is relatively clear. And I think in Australia, we're a few years behind that, but I think we're going in a similar direction. I think when it comes to an issue which was so major and now also almost has disappeared, the key instigators, in my view, and all our views of this kind of crime need to be both exposed but also discussed. And I think many of those key players in the mainstream press don't want to talk about it because it's far easier to analyse crazy right-wing Muslims who kill innocent civilians than someone who believes, for example, strongly in, say, Israel, which I talk about in my chapter.
Is there a sense, though, that e-publishing produces a perhaps a less polished work? I'm talking about the look of it. There are the advantages of the links, but, you know, is it a sort of a crash onto the internet?
Well, I think that that's not necessarily a question of format, because you can do absolutely wonderful things with e-publishing, and as people become more and more confident with designing for electronic format, as Andy says, with video and all the rest of it, I think you'll see some absolutely beautiful productions. Of course, if you're producing something very, very quickly, then there is always a trade-off between time and being as polished as you might like to do. And I guess that's the beauty of ebook, is it allows you to make that decision. If this is something that needs to get out quickly, let's do it quickly, and maybe it'll be a bit sort of a bit more rushed than we might otherwise do. But we can get out quickly, and we can sell it for $6.99. So, you know,
it's
much cheaper. That's right.
And it's all about the words, isn't it, Anthony Lowenstein?
Absolutely. And I think for all of us, writers, both here and in the UK, come from different perspectives. Yes, obviously there's a progressive viewpoint that all of us have, but none of us, I would say, all agree with each other. There are differences, there's different perspectives. And one of the things the three editors wanted to do was to cover very different areas, everything from the far right to mainstream politics and how the right has infected that, to what I write about in terms of the nexus between Israel and the far right. All these different areas can be covered by different writers in different countries. And I think in Britain, although there was a bit more coverage in the press there because there's a bit more diverse media than there is in Australia, it was still quickly depoliticised, as it has been here. So we felt, I guess, as an e-book, it almost, to me, would have been bizarre to not release this quickly. Not that you couldn't release a book in 6 months or 12 months, and there is talk about releasing it as a printed edition possibly next year in a sort of update version here or in Britain. But in terms of the quick reaction, as all of us spend a lot of time online, on Twitter, on blogs, it's almost as if by waiting for 6 months, people wouldn't have forgotten about it. But the immediacy, I think, matters a lot in these sort of questions.
Well, one of the benefits, though, of going through a publisher is you get access to the publisher's resources, the PR, the proofreading, the editing, the copywriting, all of those kinds of things. And more importantly, you get free publicity. Is how with a new e-publishing venture like this, how does the book get publicity without the help of a publisher?
Well, that's always been the issue for these kind of projects, not simply e-books, of course, but since the desktop publishing revolution, producing books yourself physically has been very, very easy for a long time, and it is always the publicity that's the issue. But I guess the advantage of the e-format for us is that many of the people contributing to this book have reasonably high profile online as bloggers or through social media and all the rest of it, and you can utilise that profile directly, so people can people can link on their blog, you know, or send it around their social media networks in a way that you simply can't do with a print book. So, I think we are moving to a different model of publicising books. Of course, it's great to be talking to the book show about it, and all that sort of media is still very, very important. But I think one of the beauties of this project, it was able to capitalise on people's strength on online media.
But who's the audience? Is it just the online media? I mean, who are you targeting?
Look, I think
both of you, Anthony, you can throw in too.
I suppose, look, the audience, I think, is a range of people. I mean, one thing that should be made clear, one doesn't have to have an iPad or a Kindle to read it. You can read it on a desktop computer. So anyone who has access to the internet, which is most people these days, can download it and read it. So it's really accessible to anybody who's interested, I guess, in the issue, in politics, in the rise of the right, really anybody. And I think on Amazon, for example, where it became available 2 weeks ago, it's supposedly selling relatively well. And I think one of the things also that we shouldn't forget is that the methods of promoting books with the mainstream media is seriously breaking down. Anyone who obviously observes books, and of course most listeners of this show will realise that sections in the mainstream press for books is decreasing and has been doing so for the last 5 or so years. That trajectory is not going to change anytime soon. So the way of promoting a product alternatively, whether it's through Twitter, when all of us are quite big on Twitter, blogs, yes, having mainstream media coverage clearly is invaluable still, and that's not going to change. But to simply rely, as I think many print authors do, on the hope that publisher X will promote them in The Age, The Australian, wherever it may be, and not relying on new media, I think is a mistake. And we can all utilise our own social media contacts, both young and old, to get this message out. And as people, I think, are receptive to it, because a lot of people were so shocked by what happened 3 months ago and want to know a bit more about why it happened and why, as Jeff and I both feel, this sort of thing, tragically, is likely to happen again somewhere.
Jeff, who's financing this venture?
Well, again, one of the advantages of...
In our final minutes, I guess.
One of the advantages of this format is that the costs are very, very low. None of us are going to make any money from this book, but, you know, you're not paying for... You're not paying for ink, you're not paying for... For paper, so you can turn it around very, 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 very quickly. So it's not something that we did to get rich out of it. It's something because we think it's a very, very important issue. I mean, The Guardian today has another report about the increase of anti-Muslim bigotry across Europe. This issue is not going away. It's only going to become more important as time passes.
And I was reading some of the essays, and the final essay as we're winding up from Guy Rundle, who basically says that this book has been a contribution, therefore, to clarifying the issues after these and laying the groundwork for the left to regain its confidence, to essentially a clarion call to the left to lift its game.
Well, yes, definitely. I mean, this book was written before the looming financial crisis that is about to break happened. And if the far right was already growing before this coming economic meltdown, it's very scary to think what's going to be happening in the next few years. So definitely, it is time for a wake-up call, and it's time to wake up.
I think also, just finally, that yes, very, very quickly, that I think since September 11th also, many on the left have been unsure how to respond when the right often says, this is for national security. And to actually find an articulate way to respond to that when these sort of things are happening, I think is what this book tries to do.
Well, thank you both for coming on The Book Show. Anthony Lowenstein is a Sydney-based author, freelance journalist and blogger. Thanks, Anthony.
Thank you so much.
And Jeff Sparrow is an author and the editor of Overland Literary Journal.
Thanks,
Jeff. And on New Toya, Anders Breivik, Right Terror, Racism in Europe is available as an ebook from Amazon, and we'll put the address on our website. And in other ebook news, the independent publisher Scribe has just published its first exclusive ebook, Journalism at the Crossroads by Margaret Simons, a book investigating the challenges posed for journalists and commentators in this digital age. I'm Anita Barrow, this is The Book Show, and we're on ABC Radio National.